Hey there, welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us again today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. We're going to be talking about mental illness today. Yassine Hall is going to be my guest, and she's going to talk about her personal struggles and struggles with her mother, who had schizophrenia. She's written a book about it. Excellent information, good stuff to hear. And we're going to be with Yassine right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Love to get mail from you. Mathers Rodney at yahoo.com. MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Hey everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Yassine Hall. Her book is called Journey Untold, Twisted Love, My Mother's Struggle with Mental Illness. Welcome, Yassine.
Welcome. How are you doing? Thank you. I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. Thanks. Listen, we have a little tradition here on the show. We always want to know a little bit about your background. So if you could just start telling us a little bit about yourself before we get into the book.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yassine Hall. I am 44 years old. I was born and raised in the United States, Virgin Islands. I'm a business owner. I'm a real estate mogul, to name just a few. I wear many hats. I'm an Ending the Stigma presenter for a NAMI organization. I speak to the children in high school about ending the stigma. I'm also an advocate for mental health in urban America and in the United States, Virgin Islands. I own a boutique, and I'm also a dance mom and a mother of four children.
Wow. Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about your book. Give us a little bit of intro, just, you know, kind of general what it's about.
Okay, Journey Untold is a series of books that I plan to write later on. I plan to write about three or four more books. This is the first book in the series called Twisted Love, My Mother's Struggle with Mental Illness. It's about my life and my mother's life growing up on a small island where everyone knows everyone. And there's mental illness, but while I'm growing up on the island, no one really knows what it is. We are not educated about what mental illness is. We just know that her behavior is odd. And I talk about the different stages that she went through that went undiagnosed until she had schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And basically it's about my life and how what she suffered with its mental illness, how it affected her, how it impacted the island, and how it impacted myself.
Okay. Well, what were some of the signs that you saw, some of the behaviors that led you to believe there might be something wrong?
I would say the first sign was when I was about 5 or 6 years old. There were stages that I noticed growing up as a child until it ultimately became schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. Between the age of 5 and 8, she had that overprotective love. I mean, it wasn't no sadness yet. She just made me her everything. And she just focused on me. She quit her job. And my mother has a PhD in education, to tell you a little background about my mother. So she's educated. And she actually worked for the mental health department in the Virgin Islands and quit her job and made me her whole life. So between the ages of 5 and 8, she would sit every day in the cafeteria and eat lunch with me. She's the parent that dropped me off at the door. As school finished, she was right there and the school bell rang and the door opened. And this went on for about 3 or 4 years. And then the next stage was she started to go inward. She was now sad. She was still overprotective, but now she was no longer loving. She went into a state of, I would say, catatonic, where she barely spoke anymore. She just totally went inward. And sometimes getting up in the morning was hard for her to do. And if she didn't get up in the morning, there was no other way for me to go to school. She took me to school. So it was like she was forcing herself every day to get up, and now I was becoming a burden. Because that's when the undiagnosed, now I know the signs and the symptoms, that's when the onset of depression set in, and no one understood. Then about high school, I mean middle school, it got worse. Her illness got worse. Now she's no longer quiet. She started talking to herself, having full-blown conversations with herself. I no longer existed. Until the one day that when she actually went into schizophrenia, she and my grandfather were downstairs having an argument. And it just evolved into a mother that I didn't know. She was now violent. She was now lashing out. And all of this was at me. And here I was, 12 years old. And I found myself, I mean, there's different events that happened, but it ultimately ended that day with her running behind me, screaming, "Hold her. I'm going to kill that little girl," which was me, and somebody saving me from her. And ever since that day, she's been a schizophrenic.
Okay. And so time passes, and what happens next?
Well, they had to bake her after that day that she was running behind me. They had to bake her after. And, you know, they, being the Virgin Islands, we didn't have the resources back then. She was pretty much in the institution for about 3 days. And came out and had to sleep with me on the bed every day, live with me every day. And her schizophrenia just progressed. Mind you, I'm using the word schizophrenia because back then there was no label to it. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what it was. I know what it is now because I've done the research to know what she did have. She started talking to herself in different languages, and it wasn't languages that we know. It was her own language. She would have full-blown conversations with at least 7 different people, and none of her 7 personalities knew each other. It just started to progress more and more and more. So now it came to a point that she was able to live under an apartment, but it just wasn't. She wasn't keeping it clean. And my grandmother was trying to give her as much independence as she could, but it wasn't working. So my grandmother built a separate house in the back for her to have, because she just couldn't live with anyone anymore, including myself, because she was afraid of germs. She was afraid of dirt. Mm-hmm. And she would bathe in rubbing alcohol every day. She had bottles. Like, she would get public assistance, and she would use her entire check and go to the store and buy rubbing alcohol. And that's what she would bathe her skin in. Yes.
Okay,
it just got to that point.
So through your teen years, you had this huge adversity in your life that you were having to deal with. How did you do that?
I went inward. Younger in elementary, the kids teased me every day. There was not a day that I was not teased. Because my mother was what they quote-unquote called crazy, I ultimately was crazy too. For no other reason than being born to my mother. That's it. I had no signs, no symptoms. I was a smart little girl getting A's in school, but I was also labeled crazy to where they labeled me. My nickname was Crazy Mary's Daughter for every day of my school life, all the way up until high school.
Wow.
That was me. And I hated going to school, not because I didn't want to learn, but because the kids tortured me with her. They would chastise me. I didn't have any friends at all. I just went to school, did my work, and took the bullying. Sometimes my cousins and some of the girls in my class would speak up for me and say, "Leave her alone." And my cousins, about 3 or 4 times that I remember, they fought for me because I wouldn't fight for myself, because I was like, I went inward. I became a complete introvert. I was silent. I didn't say anything unless somebody said something back to me. Mm-hmm. That was it. And I just pretty much coped on my own until I fell into depression, my own sub-childhood depression at the age of 14.
So now you've got an issue that you've got to deal with in addition to taking care of your mother.
Exactly.
Do you write about that in the book as well?
Yes. All that is in the book, and I explain how I got through it, and I explained the impact that it had on me and how I pulled out of my grandmother, who pulled me out of depression. If it wasn't for her, I couldn't tell you. My mind would have probably crossed the edge like my mother.
Let's talk about that for just a second. So what, you know, how did you get yourself out of depression? You say your grandmother helped you. How did that work?
I remember that whole 13, 14 year was basically a fog because of the depression that I fell into. But what I remember is 6 months after my mother had her nervous breakdown, my grandfather passed away, which is her dad. Mm-hmm. So not only did my grandmother in her 50s have to take on becoming my mother, but now she has to now take care of her ill daughter. So she had and deal with the grief of my losing her husband over all of this. She went back to school, got her education, and she had a sixth grade education at the time and started to work because she had to take care of me and her. I had different signs. First, I was failing in school. I went from a straight-A student. I would literally go into class and write my name on the paper and walk out the classroom. And the teachers and the counselors said nothing for the whole year. They said nothing. No one caught on to that I was falling. No one. Because they didn't know. They were not aware of what it is. They just thought that, you know, here's a little girl. She has a whole lot going on. Just leave her alone. That's basically what they did. She, however, noticed it when I have long hair. My hair is almost down to my back, my mid-back. And I took a scissors and completely cut off all of my hair, completely. And my grandmother, that was it. She was like, what? She stopped. What is going on with you? And I didn't exactly express her. I told her, I remember telling her, this is too much. This is just too much. I don't want to be here. I just don't want to be here anymore. And she didn't know to understand what be here meant. In my mind, it didn't mean kill myself. I didn't want to be in this situation, in this life. Can I go on a whole nother island and live with everybody? It's me and her. You know, that's how I felt. And I explained that to her. And she's like, oh, my God, I can't. She, I remember she not falling to her knees and saying to God, please, not her. Don't let her go. Please, not her. Save my granddaughter. And she was crying. And I guess she spoke to someone that told her, encourage her to do activities. So she tried to teach me how to cook. That didn't work. It had no interest. She tried to show me how to plant because she was a gardener. She used to have rose beds and stuff. That didn't work. From the first time I got pricked by a thorn, I was done. I had no interest in that anymore. But she has always been a seamstress. All my school uniforms have always been made by my grandmother. So she had to make a school skirt for me, and this is where the generation comes in. She's from old school, and here it is. I wanted my school skirts to my knees. She's used to wearing school skirts when she went to school to her ankles. And I was like, Grandma, I'm already being teased because of my mother. I'm already being bullied. I don't want to be screamed at too for being unfashionable. Can I please have my school skirts to my knees? And we fought for like a half hour back and forth about that. So finally she said, you know what? Do what you want. If you want to learn, if you want to, your school skirt that short, make it yourself. And she didn't expect me to respond back and go, okay, show me. And she caught me. She said, oh. And she showed me. And she gave me the discretion to make it however I wanted, in whatever design I wanted. And I made it, and I started making school skirts for other kids in school, and they saw my school skirts because they were designed differently, and that's where I started my fashion design.
So that is what helped pull you out of the depression, to be involved in an activity that you liked. It also encouraged some pro-social type behaviors. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk more with Yassine Hall right after this. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope.
Shit I did 18 months SOTP.
lots of cool guests coming up in the next few weeks here on the Journey of Hope. And if you know someone that would benefit from the podcast, let them know about it, okay? And if there's something that you would like for me to address on the show, let me know about that as well. You can catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. With Yasin Hall. She's got a book called Journey Untold, Twisted Love by Mother's Struggle with Mental Illness. And we're talking about how she dealt with the adversity going through her childhood and how that affected her and how she eventually was able to pull herself up with the help of her grandmother. And I want to go more specific into mental illness, well, just more general about mental illness. Yasin, what kinds of things have you learned about people knowing about mental illness in terms of the stigma? And you say that there's a problem getting info into urban areas. What is the solution for that? What have you learned about that?
I've learned from two sides. So to explain the question, I have to talk about it from two areas. I'm talking about it from urban America, and I have to talk about it from the Virgin Islands, because there are two different things because of the culture.
Okay.
Culture is a big part of the stigma. In the United States, when it comes to urban areas, the biggest problem I found from my personal experience is that urban America does not know that we have the resources available. And it's a lack of awareness and education, and it could be because they simply can't afford the resources that are available. That's a possibility, because mental health is very expensive in America, but the resources are here. You have access. There are a few organizations, especially in my community. We have about three or four organizations in Orlando that are free resources, but the community just do not know about them. And they don't know the signs and symptoms in themselves to seek help in those resources. In the Virgin Islands, we have no resources. Mm-hmm. That's it. We don't have it. So there's no education, there's no awareness, and there's no resources. So if someone is having depression, they go undiagnosed until it gets out of control and it's to the point that you see them walking on the street because they don't have the education to know that they have a problem, and that's it. And it's not because necessarily they can't afford it. We just don't have the resources. So that's what I'm doing on my part. I started my own not-for-profit organization called Journey Untold, and I'm bringing the resources to the Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
From here.
Good for you. Excellent. And when we, let's say we see the signs of mental illness in someone, what do we do? You talk about the resources. What's the next step? What do we do?
But if you know the signs and the symptoms and you see it in someone, the best thing to do is reach out and just ask the person. The first step as a American citizen or as a human or as an individual or a family member, just ask, start asking questions. They will answer you. If you haven't gone into that part where you've diagnosed with mental disorder, they will answer you because they are seeing the signs too.
So people, hang on just a second. Yes, people that are having mental difficulties, they know that they're sick, do they?
Unless they're it depends. It really is on a spectrum. If they have gone undiagnosed for quite some time, mm-hmm. only a doctor or a therapist can really help that mind, calm okay. that mind. Uh-huh. But if it's someone in your, you see the sign, if you knew the signs from before, if you're educated to know the signs, you can seek in someone else before it gets to that point where they have to see a therapist or a counselor.
Okay. So,
but your education so what is it, key.
Oh, okay. So let's get back to what it is we do if we see somebody close to us that's demonstrating, you know, abnormal types of behaviors.
Right. So I'm going to give you an example.
Okay, good.
This just happened today. Someone saw my videos that I did about suicide because this is National Suicide Prevention Month in September. And because of my video, and I talked about the signs and the symptoms, one of the young ladies on my Facebook page had a son that came to her. He's 19. I came to her and said, "Mom, I don't want to be here." And that's a very common reaction from a lot of people that are about to go into depression. Mm-hmm. They feel like they don't want to be here. They start to feel useless. They start sleeping a lot. They start going inward. They stop being social. It's starting to affect their livelihood. This is where you need to really grab that person. And the only way to grab that information is to ask questions and ask the right questions, because there are triggers that can trigger that person, and you don't know what the triggers are. Even sometimes the individual who is having a situation, they don't know what the triggers are as well. But when someone comes to you and says, "I don't want to be here," don't brush them off. Try and get as much information as you want out of them. What do you mean you don't want to be here? You don't want to be here in this house? You don't want to be in this room? You have to be very specific and break it down and ask as many questions as you can. And your job is to ask, and listen. And listen is the key. Mm-hmm. Don't take it that they're looking at tension, what is going on, and you're trying to figure it out. If someone comes to you and says, "I don't want to be here," that's the first sign of help. They are asking for your help. Help them. Mm-hmm. Call around, get in touch with your insurance. 211 is very big here in Orlando, and there are a national crisis intervention line that you can call from your cell phone. Call 211. Okay. They will help you to ask the right questions to that person.
Excellent. Very good information. How do we get your book?
You can get my book at journeyuntold.com, and they can follow me on all the social media platforms on the Journey Untold.
Excellent.
And it's also on Amazon as well.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, we'll put a link up here when we post podcast. Yassine Hall, I admire your determination, and you sound like you're really doing some good work out there. The book's called Journey Untold, Twisted Love, My Mother's Struggle with Mental Illness. It looks like it's a great read. You might want to check this out, folks. Yassine, I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, everybody, I want to remind you that if you're in the middle of a job search and you come across a company that specializes in ex-offenders and says that they want some money up front, don't do it. That's a ripoff. That's a scam. Those people are going to steal your money. Don't work with those kinds of services. There are services out there that will charge a fee after you've been placed, but they don't take the fee from you. They take it from the employer that hired you. So those are the only legitimate ways that works. And I've seen a couple more. I didn't see any for a while, and now I'm starting to see these again, these companies. One or two of them, I'm not going to specifically name them, but they target ex-offenders, and they say, you know, for a fee, we'll get you a job. And those guys are con artists. They're scam artists. Stay away from them, okay? Hope that helps. Hello, we're at the end of another show. I want to thank my special guest, Yasine Hall. Interesting topic. You want to go check out her webpage and see what else she has to offer on the subject of mental illness. And I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.